Good evening, everyone. First of all, I'd like to express my heartfelt thanks to St George's School, to Headmaster Raymond McGovern, and in particular to David Waters and Pam Bainbridge for organising this event. And I'm delighted to see so many of you here this evening. It gives me a thrill, goosebumps, to be standing here this evening. Why, you may ask? Well, apart from the thrill of telling you a little bit about my book, it's because this is where both of my parents and their respective siblings were educated back in the early days of this remarkable school. My grandparents, on both my father's and my mother's sides, moved with their respective families to Harpenden soon after Cecil Grant and his wife moved their school here from Keswick in 1907. The memory of my father's elder brother, Second Lieutenant Wilfred Patrick Otto Thomas, killed at the Somme, is here in this chapel, there in that window. That is a memory which I'm given to understand is brought to mind each year here on Remembrance Day, November the 11th. Another memory, the story of another old Georgian, is made much of in this school. The inspirational story of my mother's youngest brother, George Aylwin Hogg, who is the subject of the book I'm here to talk about this evening. George, my Uncle Aylwin, died in 1945 at the age of only 30 in China, achieving more in that short life than perhaps most people achieve in a normal lifetime. This school was remarkable 100, 110 years ago, as it is now. I believe that much of George's, Aylwin's, qualities of character, his strengths and his abilities were gained from being part of this school community. The same core values were taught then as they are now, even today. Democracy, the rule of law, individual liberty, mutual respect, and tolerance of those of different faiths and beliefs. These principles, added to his strong home influences, pacifism, the Fellowship of Reconciliation, a nonconformist upbringing, learning to listen to his inner voice, his conscience, a Montessori style of preschool education, learning to think for himself from a very early age, a year away in an international school in Switzerland, self-expression and courage of his own convictions, and through his good friends, the Nelsons and the Hunters, an introduction to a very practical form of Christian way of life. All these made for a powerful mix which made him the extraordinary man he turned out to be. I, of course, had known something of my uncle since my early childhood. I was born about 6 months after my Uncle Aylwin died, and in his memory I was given his middle name, the name by which he was known within the family rather than George. The name Aylwin is of ancient Celtic origin and was one of the very earliest known baptismal names, meaning wise or noble friend. Aylwin did indeed become a wise and noble friend of the ordinary Chinese people during those war-torn years of the 1930s and 40s. And as I say, I knew only a little about him from an early age, but I became fascinated by his story in 1988. My family received an invitation from the Chinese government to attend a series of memorial events which were to be held in China in the spring of 1988. My family urged me to represent them there, so off I went on a most memorable journey. These memorial events were in honour of a New Zealander, Rui Ali, who had died in December 1987 at the age of 90 after living and working in China for 60 years. He was one of the founders of the Chinese industrial cooperative movement during the war years. As the week of memorial meetings and banquets in Beijing, Lanzhou, Zhengye and Shandan progressed, it became clear to me that these events were not only in the memory of Rui Ali. My uncle's name came up all the time, and I began to realize that my Uncle Aylwin's deeds there in China were and still are remembered with great gratitude, as are those of Rui Ali. A most extraordinary level of honor for foreigners in China. Towards the end of my stay there, I was invited back to China to act the part of my uncle in a six-part television miniseries. So to get into the role, I started to read his letters. And after my stint at acting, I started to write. My Aunt Rosemary handed over to me boxes of letters and typescripts of articles that my uncle, her brother, had written. I quickly realized what an easy, lyrical, graphical style of writing he had in all that he wrote. So I made my book what one might regard as, more or less, an autobiography of an adventurous young man who went out into the world trusting in fate. That is to say, I have to a large extent unashamedly used his exquisite, most descriptive, authoritative words, with just some degree of my own interjection in order to establish chronology and background. Aylwin wrote of his hitchhiking adventures in Europe during the summer vacations when at Oxford. He wrote of his hitchhiking adventures crisscrossing the USA, of his time in Japan, where the people were starting to become suspicious of their government's propaganda about what their soldiers were doing in China. He arrived in Shanghai shortly after the Japanese atrocities in Nanjing, and he became a journalist based in the then wartime capital, Hankou, which gave him the chance to travel widely, observe and write. Later he joined parties of guerrillas and so managed to see firsthand how resistance to the Japanese happened on the ground. He then became involved with the Chinese industrial cooperatives, who were setting up small-scale industry in the hinterland, bringing together refugees with their various skills from the destroyed coastal industrial belt. The organization needed a publicity man to write about the organization and publish articles abroad to bring in needed financial support. Big money started to flow from the US and from Canada, and New Zealand, and Australia, the UK, and other European countries, and from the Philippines also. Soon it was realized that a form of technical training was required to ensure development and continuation, and so the cooperative organization's first school was founded in Chuanshipu, in the mountains southwest of Xi'an. Aylwin's resourcefulness made this happen, and great progress was made. His solution to success was to build an identity for the school that became a tradition which moulded the motley crew of pupils and staff into an institution following the same core values as St. George's: democracy, the rule of law, individual liberty, mutual respect, and the tolerance of those of different backgrounds. My manuscript lay dormant for some years. Life got in the way as it can. And now, in retirement, I've managed to get the thing out there. Blades of Grass, the story of George Elwin Hogg. This is a story of perseverance, of service, of dedication, of a young man who touched the hearts of ordinary Chinese people. Rui Ali penned an epitaph on Elwin's untimely death. Through his being and working, many blades of grass will grow in places where none grew before. The 2008 film out of Hollywood called The Children of Huangshi was a highly romanticized version of a small but far from insignificant part of Elwin's story, an episode in a young life which had become legend. And with legend, some seeds of myth often get sown as personal stories are told and retold, as memories become vague with time and wishful thinking, but with good intention. Into my book, I've tried to put the facts of what became legend. I've tried to put his adventures into the context of the greater picture of what was happening in the world. I've tried to explore the influences which came to form this remarkable character that bridged the gap between East and West. His memory is so very highly regarded in China, but is only just being discovered in his own country. In 2015, when President Xi Jinping made his state visit to the UK, in his speech at the state banquet hosted by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, he made a point of mentioning my uncle's name as one of the shining examples of the very much appreciated help that came from Great Britain during those troubled years of internal conflict and resistance to Japanese aggression. More recently, SACU, the Society for Anglo-Chinese Understanding, has set up a memorial fund in Elwin's name in order to promote educational exchange between the UK and China. We were to have had visiting us here today a delegation from Lanzhou City University. Unfortunately, there's been a glitch in the issuing of their visas, which has delayed their arrival. So I do hope that my book will play some role in promoting exchange and understanding. A group of academics in China are taking steps to have my book translated into Mandarin in order to publish in China. So we'll see how that might pan out. And I've received a very positive assessment of the possibility to make a documentary based on my book. So in time, we'll see how that works out also. On an ending note, I might say with due modesty that reviews are very encouraging. If I might quote from one of these: "Any book that has me in tears at the end has been worth my time. Any book that has me hoping it will end differently to the way I know it must is worth the reading. Any book that convinces me that maybe there is still hope in the world, that for all the mistakes made thus far, still being made right now, there is a common humanity which ultimately, eventually, must do some good. That is worth the writing and the reading and the time. Blades of Grass is one such book. It's a forgotten story, an unknown story for most people. It's one that should be told and reflected upon. Hogg's story has given me another insight into the Chinese people as people, rather than the political pawns and players that we normally see. The book has been published as a personal honour to a family memory, but it is bigger than that. It is bigger than honouring the memory of George Hogg and of Ruey Alley and the work they did. It is a call to rethink where we are now and what of those experiences are worth repurposing for the modern world. Thank you all for coming and allowing me to tell you a little.